gavel, Mr. Speaker. This one doesn't work. Joint meeting of the House and Senate Labor and Commerce Committees will come to order at 4:08 p.m. on January 23rd. And if I could have the clerk take the roll, please.
Representative Holmes?
Present.
Representative Miller?
Present.
Representative Chenault?
Here.
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Representative Sadler?
Here.
Representative Thompson?
Here.
Chair Olson?
Present.
Senator Diesel?
Here.
Senator Bernard?
Here.
Senator Davis?
Here.
Senator Egan?
Here.
Senator Pascoe?
I'll let the record reflect we do have a quorum, but we won't be voting on anything today. So anybody has any pressing needs and has to leave, you won't be needed for a vote. But we only have one item on the calendar today, and that is the gentleman sitting in front of us, Mr. T.W. Patch, the chair of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And briefly, he's going to discuss the executive summary of a change in the timelines and go on to other topics. Toward the end of the meeting, we'll be recessing briefly and then going into executive session. And then we will come back on the record to gavel out. But, welcome back, Commissioner Patch, and the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chair Olson. Senator Egan, Chairman Olson, members of the committees, it is a pleasure to appear before you. On behalf of every employee and those especially at the RCA who may be dialed in at the moment, I will attempt to echo what Chair Olson has just said, and the key word there was briefly. On behalf of my fellow employees and my commissioners, I thank you for this opportunity to meet with you early in the session. We at the RCA believe the work we do is important, and we are hopeful that before the pressure of the legislative session mounts upon all of you and time grows short, that your willingness to listen and ask questions in this joint committee setting is truly appreciated. On a personal note, I'd like to thank each of you. 2 years ago, the Alaska legislature confirmed me to serve as a commissioner. And while in the intervening 2 years, I've been reintroduced to the delights of such concepts as decisional fatigue and sleepless nights, it has also reintroduced me to the joy of accomplishment that results when hard decisions are well made and the public benefits. Before beginning in earnest, I was invited to meet with you partly so that you would see a new face. Now, when that invitation was first announced, I took it to Bob Pickett, and we agreed that his is not an old face. He would agree that his is a much newer face than mine. Be that as it may, he sends you his personal regards. Partly, I was asked to provide an overview of RCA activity. That is what I intend to do. My presentation, however, is only summary in nature, and I don't want you to harbor any disappointment by virtue of failed expectations. If you wish me to return at any point in time or address any particular brief you may have, I will willingly and happily do so. But it was not my instruction to be prepared today to go into every important matter that the RCA has conducted itself with in this past year. Former Chief Justice Earl Warren had a ritual when he approached the Supreme Court activities that he was tasked to do. He once passed the advice about his ritual on to a law clerk, and frankly, it became a very short footnote to the legal lore that surrounds decision-making. Justice Warren started each day by reading the newspaper, and he prescribed a specific order that a newspaper should be read in. to maximize the knowledge that's contained in those few pages of what today may be a dying institution. He said that you should first start with the sports page. It's the part of the paper that exhorts effort, rewards preparation, and teamwork, and catalogs man's accomplishments. He said that you next read the front page. It points out the potential mood of the day. It reports opinions, some good, some bad, some well-founded, some not so well-founded. It's the part of the paper that also catalogs failures in government and society. And from those failures, perhaps we can learn where and maybe how we can do better. And lastly, Justice Warren suggested that you should read the comic pages. And the reason for reading the comic pages last was so that it would put a smile on your face and restore perspective. With that in mind, I turn to the RCA sports page. When last the initials RCA were before you in special session, you were considering the reauthorization of the RCA, and there was an ongoing debate about the period of time for which the RCA should be re-extended or reauthorized, or how its sunset should be dealt with. Eventually, a determination was made by this body that the RCA should be extended from 2011 to 2014. And in connection with that extension, we were directed to offer a proposal for consideration by the houses, whereby the time to consider a tariff filing that changes a utility's revenue requirement or rate design might be decided in less than 15 months. We responded. Last week, enrolled with the Senate Secretary and the House's Clerk, a report to the legislature by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska on a proposal to reduce the statutory timeline for tariff filings to change the utility's revenue requirement or rate design was filed. It is enrolled electronically, and there are a number of copies available. If you wish a personal copy, I'm sure I can arrange that. After an honest self-evaluation by the Commission, after discussions with national leaders, academics, and state commissions, and after taking public comment and digesting it, we formulated a game plan. We determined to open a series of regulations dockets, the outcome of which, when they are concluded, we believe will improve the utility regulatory landscape and afford utilities in this state opportunities for cost savings in litigation expense and help with predictability regarding the time within which rate changes may be implemented whereby they can recover their their revenue requirement. These benefits to the utility companies will not come at the risk of just and reasonable rates paid by utility customers. We also determined that we could change our own internal processes. And by doing so, we could help achieve decisions in shorter times. These changes have become known to the utility community with the filing before this body, this legislative body, of our report. It was not previously released to anyone. Nonetheless, as you may expect, utility companies pay attention. And I'm here to assure you that I have not received a single negative comment from any utility executive. And while there may be some few concerns, by and large, I believe the utility community is four square behind the proposal. It will be formally announced to the utility community at our very first public meeting, which will occur on the 1st of February in Anchorage. I would like to point out that our proposal, we believe, will achieve a significant reduction in the timelines for decision, and it will do so in the current statutory framework. It will not require legislation by you. Between now and 2014, when you next consider our reauthorization, and when you may also at that time consider our timelines, you will be able to do so on a developed record. Part of our proposal is to provide for you at the time of our next reauthorization hard numbers on timelines and a list of those factors, that is, actual case results and facts and timelines that you may consider as we will consider as they are developed and evolve. We believe they will result in shortened timelines, continued reliable service, and with respect to some of our regulatory proposals being considered by the utilities, we believe they will also result in decreased rates. Turning next to another part of our RCA newspaper, I'd like to refer you to the front page. You were each delivered a copy of the RCA's fiscal year 2011 annual report. The report lists and briefly describes significant events in the life of the RCA and the utilities that appear before us. As you or your staff review it, if you have questions, please, I invite your calls. What the annual report reflects is the number and the complexity of a great many proceedings. By simple arithmetic, you can discern that the RCA workload is very heavy. And while I would go over the front page with you, I've never been one of those who enjoyed watching a PowerPoint and having it read to me. So I will, in keeping with my promise to the chairman, be brief and invite you to read your own front page. Now I've come to that portion of the newspaper referred to as the comic strip or the funny pages, depending upon what your generation may be. And sadly, without meaning to be sad in a disheartened sense, the RCA doesn't have the funny pages. What I'd like to do instead is play a game. It's a numbers game. What I propose to do is invite your imagination and your knowledge, your awareness of what goes on in the state, and I will let you keep your answers to the questions to yourself. There will be no score. What I propose to do is list a series of numbers for you. I will pause, and if you will play my game, you will imagine what the number may represent. And then I will tell you what I think it represents. $50 million in bankruptcy debt. That is the amount that Naknek Electric is seeking protection from in the federal bankruptcy court in Anchorage, Alaska. Naknek Electric is not a regulated electric utility. That doesn't mean it isn't an electric utility that services a community that is important to all of us. $907 million. You all silenced your cell phones. 907 is your area code. by virtue of diligent work, the RCA, in connection with the telephony service providers in the state and the National Numbering Administrator, has extended the estimated exhaustion date for the 907 area code. It has extended that date from the third quarter of this year, third quarter 2012, until very late in the year 2024. Congratulations. We remain under one area code. $250 million. That is the estimated cost provided by Matanuska Electric Association to build new generation to serve its member owners. 41 million dollars. That is the amount of plant already installed by the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility, for which it did not seek recovery in its last rate case. $15 million. That is the amount of federal grant funds the RCA jointly administers in order to improve or assure the delivery of Alaska broadband services in rural Alaska so that our neighbors in smaller bush communities can be better served and can follow along with us on the internet. $459 million. The amount that Municipal Light and Power in Anchorage, Alaska expects to invest between now through 2015, three short years, to develop generation assets, its Beluga gas field, and enhance its distribution system. So that you think that these, so that you may have some confidence in me and some confidence that these numbers are sourced, I will show you Mr. Bruce Posey's picture, the General Director of Municipal Light and Power, and you may read that last number in his flyer. Now the next question, I suppose, is intended to be that smile, since I hope the numbers provided perspective. How did you do? It doesn't matter. You're better informed. Keep in mind what you didn't hear. Anything at all about 100-year storms or Juneau's Snettisham power line. You didn't hear about AEL&P's inclusion of Lake Dorothy in its rate base. You didn't hear about the Cook Inlet National Gas Storage asset and how it will begin injecting gas this next spring. I didn't mention Tugatch Electric's South Central Power Project. I didn't mention Golden Valley's wind project. I didn't discuss options for coal generation from the Healy Clean Coal Plant on the northern end of what, in Alaska, we lovingly refer to as our inner tie. I didn't talk about independent power producers. I didn't discuss with you power cost equalization. I didn't talk to you about the Federal Communications Commission order that changed the universal service funding formula for all of America, and which will have an impact in Alaska. But those and other matters, I assure you, are on the planning horizon and the event horizon for daily work. Dealing with those issues in an agency of only 60 people who are asked to do their work at a continual high level of professional precision today, asked by their commissioners to work and deliver results in a shorter time, to keep in mind the health of utilities cannot be compromised, or else utility service delivery will suffer, and they will, and to also ask of that staff that they keep in mind that the public convenience and necessity must be served at just and reasonable rates is a daunting task, and therefore my sleepless nights. Justice Warren's newspaper instruction didn't reach that realm of miscellaneous, so I'm going to suggest it comes now. I know that when I read a newspaper after I finish reading everything that I think is there that's important, I sometimes thumb through it again to make sure I didn't miss anything that was important, and that's what I propose to do. As I prepared to come before you, I asked my staff to look ahead through their calendar year 2012 and anticipate the RCA's workload. I probably would have done that eventually so that I could begin to manage and plan, but this was a very opportune time to bring the information before you as well. My finance staff tells me that I need to manage for about 30 rate cases, 14 simplified rate filings delivered at five different dates by the electric cooperatives. I need to be prepared to address the CINGSA injection rates. And on the pipeline side, there will be at least four major filings by the TAPS owners. My engineering staff informed me that nearly 50, put that in a different perspective, one a week, all year long, if I'm successful at resolving them in a week. Nearly 50 small water and wastewater utilities will require some level of attention. Most of these small water utilities have DEC concerns. They deliver service on the basis of old and under-maintained plant. They are under-collecting in rates. And this is at the same time that the federal government is cutting back on drinking water funding programs. And my engineering staff pointed out that we are presently monitoring a federal proceeding that may implicate the delivery of gas to Fairbanks. My telephone group is still trying to digest an 800-page order on the reformation of the Universal Service Fund. I will be attending a conference in Washington, D.C. in early February, partly at the behest of the administration, to look at what can be done to try and enhance Alaska's role or minimize the impact of the order on Alaska. 800 pages of FCC order. If you could encapsulate it, we could replace the pipeline because we could put the world to sleep. It would be the most effective sleeping aid known. Lastly, partly as you, as it's rumored that you may take up things like tax reform this year, I turn to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System and the rate case that the commission has been engaged in for about 7 weeks of hearings. Over 10 years ago, the owners were looking at making investments in the line with a view towards achieving a number of understandable goals. They wanted to address safety concerns. They wanted to lower operating costs. And they wanted to prepare to operate the line efficiently with lower throughputs. That investment planning and that process of construction came to be known as the Strategic Reconfiguration Project. The matter has come under scrutiny, both as to the extent of the planning, was it adequate, was it thorough, and as to the project implementation. Over the life of what construction there has been done, and it is not complete to date, there have been over 12,000 project change orders. There have been multiple changes of highly qualified, serious, and dedicated project managers who, frankly, have been overwhelmed by the project. And I can't begin to count the number of studies that I've been asked to read that explain how it came to be, or where it may have gone wrong, or what yet should be done. This fall, the case to consider whether or not the investment in the Strategic Reconfiguration Project was prudent was the investment in the project prudent, came before the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the Regulatory Commission of Alaska in concurrent hearings. That was an accommodation by both commissions, not required by law, to try and save money, try and develop a single record, try and accommodate the parties, engage in a participatory fashion in a regulatory effort. The case is important to Alaska. And Senator Murkowski appeared before you last session in a general setting. In her speech to you, she told you that 87% of the net wealth of the state is directly related to the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. That's why we took the time. That's why commissioners went to Washington, D.C. That's why we paid attention to the case. And that's why we tried to meaningfully participate collectively. As the case was ongoing, Superior Court Judge Sharon Gleason issued a decision, which I'm sure you have all heard about. It's an interesting decision. And just the other day, as the strategic reconfiguration hearing rang down, as the gavel fell, the chief judge of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission set a proceeding which would go forward from the conclusion of the strategic reconfiguration component of hearing. And one of the things he's asked for is briefing by the parties on Judge Gleason's decision and how it will impact the further proceedings before both commissions as they go on. Now, you've heard a great deal about the strategic reconfiguration plan, or maybe even come to know it as a prudence phase of the proceeding. And you're certainly all aware of how important TAPS is. But with the prudence phase just being concluded, let me not lead you astray. The rate case is long from over. As the rate case continues to unfold, there will be many more long and complex evidentiary hearings before this round of TAPS ends. We will take hearings, engage in deliberation, seek briefing from lawyers, and come to decisions on establishing a post-strategic reconfiguration rate base. We will take into account Judge Gleason's decision on the life of the line. We will come to conclusions on the basis of a developed record about the assets that make up the line and what the appropriate depreciation on those assets should be as depreciation flows through to rates. We will consider what operating expenses of the line we should allow. And eventually, we will determine rates to be charged to shippers on both the we will not decide the interstate rates, but we will decide the intrastate rates. FERC will handle the other side of the equation. That case is massive. It is unbelievably complex. There are lawyers who have made a career and will retire before TAPS ceases to pump. And it is hotly litigated. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is all the news that's fit to print. With the blessing of the chairs, I'm available for questions.
Before we get into that, I think I would like to publicly thank you with the task that you performed, particularly because of the timing of it. With the TAPS FERC balancing going on and everything else, I'm amazed that you had the staff and the time to come up with your thoughts on the timelines, particularly since, to the best of my knowledge, I believe it only involved one utility. We did not have utilities lining up in front of our door or I believe yours on issues with the timeline, with the exception of possibly one company. But I'm grateful that you found a way to resolve it and still keep your sanity.
Well, there are a great many who might question that. I will also say that that in fairness to a great many utility executives, sir, they will all be pleased that they get sooner determinations on rate case filings. And so they may have sought cover from one utility who came forward. But I believe the industry will benefit. And frankly, just as importantly, I believe that the reputation of the RCA will benefit. And that's where I work. And that reputation matters to me.
Well, with that, I'd like to open it up to anybody in either committee representing Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Commissioner, for being here today. It's your first appearance as the chair. I had two questions. The first is on the timeline issue. I read the 12-page version. I have to admit I haven't read the much more extensive one than I am now. But in coming up with the timeline suggestions, obviously you're weighing a lot of things. The desire for everybody to have quicker decisions and more certainty with the need to get enough information and enough time to flesh it out. And I know that's a real challenge. And in here you mentioned that you've opened four regulation dockets that are hopefully going to help provide additional information as you go forward. And they were pretty briefly described in here, and I was just wondering if you could take a few seconds and talk to us about those four regulation dockets and what sort of information you're hoping to gather.
I'd be happy to attempt to answer your question. Thank you very much. Uh, On page 6 of the summary is where our discussion of the new regulations proceedings begins. The first one is in the matter of the adoption of regulations regarding discovery. That's a matter that has some history before this body. At a legislative budget and audit consideration of a prior sunset, the recommendation was made that we should deal with the discovery issue. It was not dealt with as thoroughly and as openly as it perhaps should have been in retrospect. It came about again at a subsequent, it came up for discussion again at a subsequent sunset evaluation, and we decided to take it up. I believe that the discovery situation goes hand in hand with the one docket which has not been opened by the issuance of an order. It has been discussed at more than one public meeting, and you'll see that reference on page 7 of the summary at the very bottom. We caption it for purposes of record keeping as docket R-12-1. Discovery is most in a rate case as they exist today is most often first sought by the Attorney General and by interveners. And the discovery most often sought is show us your costs, show us your work papers from your experts on rate of return calculations. And when you consider that utilities can choose when to file a rate case, the identification of the information needed and the timing of the filing and any delay that may result from the review of the filed documentation until RAPA or an intervener seeks to discover materials in support of the filing is a time that is consumed. It may or may not involve questions of confidentiality or certain critical energy infrastructure, matters entitled to some certain degree of secrecy, but for purposes of a shortened timeline, we need to collapse the discovery. Hand in hand, as between R11-1 and R12-1, is an effort to bring about a change. You, as an attorney, may well be aware of Rule 26 of the Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure. Under the Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure, our court systems adopted a protocol. When you file a lawsuit, you must file these matters, these pleadings, these proofs, and they just come in sooner. So the coalescence between the discovery regulation and the pre-filing regulation, or revisiting what we need, we believe will shorten the time frame. The utility must, obviously doesn't have to do that today, but when these regulation proceedings play their way out, we believe that we will get to a point where the utility will file all of the supporting costs without RAPA having to make discovery demands, and immediately RAPA and legitimate interveners, once they're blessed with intervener status, can have access to and start the process of evaluating the case. Now, in fairness to the utilities, which you now think I'm making work all the harder by having to file all this stuff at the beginning, if you're going to be an intervener or you're going to be another player in the utility rate determination game, you're going to have to be equally forthcoming. What you're asking me to do is manage my staff to give to develop a full record upon which a just and reasonable rate determination can be made, and do it sooner. And if you want it sooner, we have to get into the sandbox together. Now, there are two other regulations. Implicated as well in R12-1 docket on the bottom of page 7, I am waiting to see how this will be received by industry, but at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, they have the Federal Energy Projects Office of the FERC as a pre-filing requirement. If you're going to come to me and tell me you wish to build a hydrokinetic energy facility at Wautauna, then Ms. Fisher Goad, on behalf of the state of Alaska and ADA and AEA, come see me. Let's talk. I believe we can emulate, condense, but emulate that same process. If you wish to file a routine filing, take advantage of our new electronic filing requirements. If you wish to file an absolutely unprecedented filing, never before seen or considered, for multiple millions of dollars before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, don't come in on Monday and say you need expedited consideration and a final decision on Friday. Come see me by Wednesday of the preceding week.
Representative Johnson,
thank you.
On that point, thank you for being here. But doesn't FERC give you the option?
There are some cases where it's mandatory, sir. At least that's how the Federal Energy Projects Office says. That's what they tell me. And I was just back there.
They have an open, Mr. Chairman, for that. I can't remember what they called. One's an open and one's a closed, where you get their support up front, which they greatly prefer. But the other one is that last-minute thing that comes in, and it is optional, but they prefer you coming in with that. And I don't know that it's mandatory. I'll have to check on it.
I would be happy to check and confer with you, sir. I did not come today as an expert. I came to I was attempting. My apologies if I have misspoken.
I would certainly not claim to be an expert, but I have spent some time in front of FERC.
I would be happy to further the discussion. I was attempting to explain to Representative Holmes one of the concepts where there's overlap between discovery and participatory conversation in advance of a filing that I believe will shorten timelines and enhance our regulatory procedures.
Well, for the life of me, I can't figure out why someone wouldn't want to come to you and get your assistance up front. And that's kind of FERC's position as well. They do have people. They don't exclude it if you don't, but for proprietary reasons or whatever, someone wouldn't get cooperation. So I want to make sure that we're careful about, there are people out there that are very secretive. They don't want to get you involved too soon. So I want to make sure that it's not exclusively, because I don't want to keep someone from doing something as a result of a regulation that you might.
Thank you for your public comment in our as yet unopened docket. It is due.
Not that I would ever do that.
You're so far ahead of
me. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chairman. Commissioner Patch, just betraying the lack of depth of experience and knowledge about the regulatory world, is the practice of individually tailored timelines for rate cases, isn't that common practice, or is it common in other state regulatory commissions to grant the full statutory timeline like your practice heretofore has been? What's the standard?
The default position in commissions outside of Alaska, in the majority of regulatory bodies, seems to be take as much time as you can, be as careful as you can, consider as much as you need, good luck. And there's a comfort in that because it's an immediately discernible date. The day of the filing is complete, you can calculate the date. And it stays that way forever, and if you get it done sooner, so much the better. There's also a comfort to the parties in that they know how to expend and husband their resources. But there is, I believe, an emerging trend to tailor the complexity of the rate case to the time involved. And that is the option we have chosen. We are attempting to compress the discovery component, and we are compressing what has previously been reserved by the Commission as its analytic and decisional time element. But we undertake that comfortably and knowingly.
And follow up briefly?
Paul.
And it sounded from the, again, the executive summary that I read that you've done some literature search, you've done some consultation with other commissioners. What has been the experience reported so far? What's the pluses and actually what's the downside? What's the bad front page news of the tailored timeline process? I appreciate your newspaper metaphors.
The downside is stress on staff, workload component, that you make a mistake, that you might have some discomfiture. Mistakes can be remedied by appeal to the courts or by reconsideration to the request to the commission. When you burn out a staffer and they go to you, they go to industry and they get paid more and don't work quite as hard, you lose a dedicated public service. I hope that's responsive.
And I guess one more if I could, sir. Is this, you say it's an emerging trend, what other state has used this practice for the longest amount of time, and how long has that been?
California is on the cutting edge. New York is a state that has 1,000 people on its regulatory commission, and they have an ability to do things faster.
Have they been doing it for a number of years?
Or over 15 years.
Thanks. Any further questions? Oh, with that, we're Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on a totally, totally separate topic, I have some constituents who are small business owners and wrote in with a question that they wanted me to read to you and ask for your comments without regard to any particular case, just in general. And the comment was that recent RCA decisions on rate making have been characterized as pro-utility, perhaps under the assumption pro-utility is pro-business, but higher monopoly rates harm businesses as well as residential customers. And as I said, this came from some constituents of mine who are small business owners, and they say they count on the RCA to watch out for them, but they have not felt that that has been the case, and I was asked for your comments on that statement.
I would, should you feel it indicated, I would be happy to engage in a conversation with any of your constituents who would identify themselves by name. And they should feel no umbrage, no pressure, no disdain. It will be an open and wide-ranging conversation. There are a number of components to your question. I'll try and address them in some fashion. Try and address each of them in some fashion. The very nature of a utility is a monopoly. So when you tell me, or when someone suggests, I'm sorry, Ms. Holm, it's not you and me except by virtue of conversation. When I am told that it's a monopoly and monopolies are bad, I will agree with you. I will say that the American way tends to prefer competitive enterprise. But when you are engaged in a business that is capital intensive, it may not be in everyone's best interest to have two very large capital-intensive businesses, each trying to recover their revenue requirement in an overlapping service area. And so what evolved long before Alaska became a state what evolved was the regulatory paradigm. I will give you a monopoly or a monopoly right to deliver this type of public convenience service in this geographic area. And in exchange for that monopoly, you will let me, government, regulate your price, and you will let me require that you deliver service. You can't discriminate. You must deliver utility service. And that's the utility paradigm. And the state legislature said to the RCA, or its predecessors in time, go forth. Let them recover costs and give them a reasonable rate of return. And that is how you will determine what they can charge. And the standard against which you, regulatory commission, must act is that the rate determination must be just and reasonable in light of the facts of the developed record infused with opinion, infused with financial analysis, and blessed by the due process of law. That's the tasking to the regulatory commission. The tasking to another component party, whom I would encourage your constituents to consult with, is RAPA, the Regulatory Affairs and Public Advocacy Section of the State Department of Law, is the public's advocate. And they do good work. They are undermanned, and they have a massive load. And they do good work. So your constituents, I thank them for employing the comment process, for seeking the guidance of their legislator, and for posing a hard question. But they have two other people they can come to. They can come to me, or they can come to RAPA, and we'll be happy, both of us happy, to sit down in any setting. And the next time there's a rate case affecting the area where they live or work, if they come to me, I'll put them on the service list, and they can read every pleading in the case as the case unfolds. And if they have a comment, I'll happily receive it and make it a public record. Those are the better citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I very much appreciate the answer, and we'll be following up with you and with my constituent.
Thank you
appreciate
very much.
That.
Short one?
Okay.
It's not the questions, it's the answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll toss out a short question, I hope for a short answer. At the end of this 2 years, basically what amounts to a trial period, how would you judge the success or failure in general terms of the proposal you're laying out here?
Did I in fact decide cases close to the timeline I set in the particular case? Did I beat the 450-day timeline? Were the parties involved in setting the timeline? And did they hew to the line that they agreed to or that I imposed? And did I develop factors that I can transmit to the legislature as for when a timeline in this, that, or the other type of case should be set at this, that, or the other period of time? And if I can do that, I would judge it an unqualified success.
Seeing no further questions, I would entertain a motion that we go into a brief executive session for further discussions with Commissioner Patch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move the committee under Uniform Rule 22 go into executive session for the purpose of discussing confidential matters pertaining to the RCA, and I request that my staff, Dana Owen, and your staff, Conrad Jackson, remain in the room.
Seeing no opposition, we will take a brief at ease and go into a special session.
executive
session.
Yeah, our first special session.